millions of people are living better. They are enjoying a healthier lifestyle, learning more about overcoming obstacles and keeping a positive outlook. Now you can be a member of the club. This is the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. Our guests share incredible stories and advice, bring new outlooks on wellness, and show you how to keep moving forward. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Casciani.
Welcome, everyone, to today's episode of the Living to 100 Club Radio Hour. I'm your host, Joe Casciani. We are live on Internet Radio on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. We have an exciting show today. Our guest is Dr. Sabrina Falkier-Montgrain. She is a physician with Sharp Reese Steele Medical Group here in San Diego, California. We'll be talking about culinary medicine, a new subject, I presume, for many of our listeners. I created the Living to 100 Club and, by extension, this radio show with the goal of helping the 50-plus age group learn more about living longer, about healthy lifestyles, and managing setbacks. Our guest today will offer her insights, both as a physician and a specialist in healthy diets and eating habits, to our audience. Here's a little background on Dr. Falkier. She was born and raised in Mexico City to Swiss and American parents. This multicultural background has shaped her culinary and worldview. She's a board-certified internal medicine physician and has worked at Sharp Reese Steele Medical Group in San Diego since 2005. She spends an average of 15 hours a week outside of her medical practice promoting culinary medicine throughout the San Diego community in a variety of ways, including lectures, recipe writing, articles, TV interviews, and podcast opportunities in various media outlets, social media. Her social media handle, by the way, is @SensationsMD, as well as cooking demonstrations and hands-on cooking classes. Very, very busy person. Her focus is awakening the senses and linking food and medicine by empowering people to better health through nutritional knowledge and culinary literacy. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Falkier.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Oh, you're very welcome. Before we get into culinary medicine, let's talk about your early attraction to cooking. How did you become so interested in this?
So, it's interesting. My, like you mentioned, that I grew up in Mexico City to Swiss parents and American parents, and I would actually spend my summers in Switzerland with my grandmother. And I realized this really shaped how I view food and really looking at ingredients at their most beautiful, fresh space. So every day I would actually go with my grandmother and acquire the ingredients for that very day. So we would go to the vegetable stand and talk to the fishmonger. And so these ingredients, we would use in very simple ways, and the meals were delicious, and they had a story to them. I could picture who had sold us the food, and I had spoken to them. And I realized that really shaped my whole view of food from a very early age.
Wow. Wow. So you spent a lot of time cooking, home-cooked cooking with your grandmother.
I did, and kind of fast forward, that was in my younger years, and I really started cooking more my own in my adult years after residency and time allowed, and it really was this love I had that to me was very separate. I had my medical practice, and I would talk about food with my patients, and then I would go home and cook, and it really wasn't until 2016 that I went to a medical conference in Napa that's a joint conference brought on by the Culinary Institute of America as well as the Harvard School of Public Health, and it's called Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives, and the whole idea is really bringing different disciplines together that may not otherwise be in the same room together, so physicians, nutritionists, dietitians, chefs, environmentalists, and really having that conversation about how to transition all this knowledge on different bases to helping people learn how to put food on their plate on a day-to-day that really helps their health.
And when was that conference? What did you say?
That was in 2016, and I've actually been going to that conference yearly since then. But that was really my aha moment of realizing that my passion of cooking and food and my career in internal medicine could really come together.
Mm. Yeah, that was the impetus for your transition, or for bridging your medical background with your interest in healthy cooking. Yeah. Well, yeah. Tell us about culinary medicine.
And it's interesting for many people who've gone to conferences related to one's work. Medical conferences are not usually tearjerkers, and I actually started crying when this keynote speaker started talking, and I realized this. I had found my home, my specialty that really called to me, and I realized my love of cooking and learning about ingredients, I could take that information as well as my scientific background to help people better their health and be empowered and be able to do it day to day.
Wow. Well, how would you define or describe culinary medicine then? I mean, we all have some some grasp of what we're talking about, but let's, in terms of details, how do you define it?
So essentially there's two pieces of it. So one, the definition is a new evidence-based field of medicine that blends the art of food and cooking with the science of medicine, so scientific nutritional information. And then the other part of it is really helping people with two pieces. One is the why, so essentially teaching people how their health is affected in both positive or negative ways, depending on what they're choosing to feed themselves. And then taking information of the next step is the how. How can I cook in ways and food combinations in ways that can move my health in a better direction?
Hmm. So blending the medicine and cooking, and then helping people understand why their habits are such as they are, and then helping them kind of shift or realign those habits. Is that the
summary? Yeah, so that's a good way to put it, is everybody's going to have a different starting point. So a lot of what I do in my day-to-day is figuring out what are people eating. Just the mere having your physician ask you, what do you eat for breakfast? What do you eat for dinner? How are you hydrating throughout the day? And knowing where their starting point is, as well as what foods they enjoy, and a lot of times also adding the piece of what is their cultural background around food. So it's not a one-size-fits-all of this is what healthy eating looks like, but really, what is this individual's starting point, and then having that conversation of finding what is the next step that individual person can make to move things in a better direction.
Mm. So would you say there's a full curriculum for becoming trained or certified in this? It's not a specialty, I take it. It's not a medical specialty, is it?
It's actually starting to be, and there is a curriculum. I am actually halfway through. Tulane actually has a program that I'm currently in the middle of doing culinary medicine certification, and it is exactly what you just said. It's a curriculum built to have modules, more general conversations, and then very specific to certain disease processes.
So at Tulane, it's offered, and other programs. I think you mentioned to me Harvard School of Public Health also has a similar program.
Yeah, so the Harvard School of Public Health puts on this conference, and as far as the certification is only through Tulane. So they have their own conference that I go to as well, and they have a lot of, within this, these modules, some of them are in the kitchen where you're actually learning yourself, navigating the sometimes awkwardness of certain recipes or certain patterns of eating that then a person can, then I can take that information and go into my hands-on cooking classes and be able to help the people who are in front of me.
Okay, so some general principles plus the kind of wherewithal on how to talk with your clients or patients or whoever in terms of exploring their attitudes and styles of cooking. So it's having the principles with the background, but also it sounds like just a good bedside manner in terms of really understanding the person in front of you and how do they handle their own world of cooking and diet. Yeah,
that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of, as we dive into this conversation, I want to make it clear that my goal and the goal within culinary medicine is that for people to realize that in simple steps, they can make meals that are absolutely delicious and they happen to be good for them. Because there's this idea that if you're eating healthy, you're either on the diet or off the diet. And the whole idea is to really move in a way that you are empowered to know that you can make delicious meals, and the part that they're nutritious or good for you is almost secondary.
Sure. It's a small step. So we psychologists like to call successive approximation. I mean, little tiny steps in the right direction are still important just the same. Are there some overall goals for this practice? I mean, obviously to get people eating better, but are there some overall overarching goals for anyone who's adopted this approach?
So if we're talking broad strokes as far as what one's plate should look like, and I would say if you look at your plate in front of you, half that plate should be vegetables and fruits with every meal. A quarter of the plate should be whole grains, and a quarter of the plate should be well thought out proteins. So if we look at this on a spectrum, really moving away from processed food towards food that you know where the source of it is. And so that's the broad stroke of your plate looking that way.
Okay. So that's common across anybody who's adopted this approach, and in terms of a good nutritious meal, half vegetable, quarter grain, and quarter protein. That's good. So I don't know if we want to get into specific recipes here, or let's talk first about general conditions, medical conditions. Are there specific approaches toward treating chronic diseases, or is it more a matter of general guidelines?
So as far as the approaches, and we can take this conversation any way that that we want here, but when I look at one of the talks that I give often, and we talk about, is what does a typical day look like, and how could I think of broad strokes to move things in the right direction? So if we start with breakfast, thinking of, okay, so what does a whole grain look like? And a lot of times, grains have gotten a bad reputation. So a lot of times when people are trying to eat healthy, they feel like grains are something they'll stay away from altogether. And we've forgotten that really a whole grain, when we think of a wheat kernel as a whole, there's three parts to that kernel. There's going to be the husk, which is the outer portion. You're going to have the endosperm, which is the white starchy component, which is what flour comes from. And then you have the germ. And the germ has a natural oils, it has proteins, it has many vitamins in it. And what has happened is as we started processing flour, we've lost all the nutritional components. So you've lost the husk, meaning you've lost the fiber component. And then we remove the germ, so we've removed the healthy oils, we've removed the vitamins and minerals, and that endosperm that gives us that white, fluffy flour doesn't really have much nutrition in it. So instead, if we think, what if we go back to that basic whole grain? So for breakfast, that would look something like oatmeal, slow-cooked oats. You can also add some quinoa as you're cooking it, and then combining that. So if that's a quarter of my portion, it's for going back to that plate we talked about. And those plates is really the ratios that you're thinking about. So a quarter would be my oats. And then for the protein component for that, I can add some nuts, which will give me not only healthy oils, but protein as well. And then half that plate for that, I would add a mix of berries, or right now apples are in season, so I would add those there. So that's a way to look at breakfast. You can also roast some vegetables for a meal for dinner, and then the next day you could put an egg on top, and that could be a way to get vegetables for breakfast. So that's a way to look at breakfast. And then if we transition to lunchtime or dinner, of the broad strokes of how can I cook in a way that simplifies my life. So either I don't have much energy on certain days to cook, or life is very busy. So this idea of batch cooking. So if I roast, I turn on my oven and I roast several trays of vegetables, and I can use them the first night as my main dish. The next day, again, I could have an egg on top and I could have vegetables for breakfast. And then that night, maybe I could combine or mix them with my favorite broth. So now I'm making a soup, all of them using the same ingredients that you've prepared by having your oven on one time. Another one is when we think of well-thought-out proteins, looking at the things such as plant-based being the healthiest, meaning they, if we think of as a spectrum of plant-based proteins like beans, lentils, tofu, edamame, any day that you can do that because there's no cholesterol on plant-based, so it's the healthiest from a cardiovascular standpoint. That is a great way, and you can, those you can use canned. It's not something you need to learn how to cook grains from scratch. So that's a great way to add those on a salad or in a soup. So any transition towards more of these really helps your health move in a better direction.
Mm. Just as a broad strokes, I like that. Just as a general overview, general guidelines, I like that. It's funny, as you're talking, I thought about some of the meals. When I traveled in Europe, I think Switzerland, you talk about your Swiss background, Switzerland probably had the best food, in my opinion. But the creams, the, you know, the cheeses, the fondues, all of the heavy fats and a lot of starches. But you're describing a much healthier approach to cooking. I like that. Well, it's time to take a short break. Please know that you can call in questions to our guest. The phone number is 866-472-5792, or you can send an email to info@living200club. This is Joe Casciani, and my guest is Sabrina Falkier-Montgrain, MD. You're listening to the Living 200 Club on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Are you living a healthy and fit lifestyle? It's not just related to your physical well-being. It also means a healthier mind, confidence, improved health, stamina, and fitness. Talking with Tremaine brings it all to you. Host Tremaine Ellis, along with her husband and co-host David Ellis, will offer support, advice, guidance, and motivation to keep you in your best shape, both physically and mentally. Talking with Tremaine can be heard live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Real Life Solutions, Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking with Dr. Sabrina Falkier-Montgrain. Sabrina, let's talk a little bit about culinary medicine and how it plays out in patient care. How do you integrate it with your patients? Do you introduce it with everyone or just some people that might be obese or, you know, having weight problems? How does it play out?
So one of the beauties is I've been lucky enough to be in my current primary care practice at Sharper East Dealey since 2005. And I've had patients I've had that whole time. And there's something so beautiful about primary care and having those long-term relationships. And so within that, I always want to hear about how people have done since the last time I saw them, as far as if there are any goals that we set of more movement or more time for themselves or more vegetables. And so I've, again, had these conversations with patients for over a dozen years, and it's really now taking it to the next level. So with every patient, I will ask about their food habits, especially in this country, we tend not to get enough vegetables and fruits to start with, and so that's often a primary focus, as well as what people are drinking, so beverages. As physicians, we're taught about to ask patients about alcohol intake, but not necessarily how they're hydrating otherwise. And so I'll approach it, and I love, Joe, that you asked about obesity or overweight, and the amazing part is when we think of culinary medicine and we think of the health conditions in this country, over 60 to 70% of them are related to lifestyle choices. So there's so much work that can be done by what one chooses to drink or feed themselves on a regular basis. So the goal, just like when the need to ask about smoking habits, I feel just as strongly that asking people about what they're eating and what they're drinking on a regular basis gives me an idea of where we're starting from. And people, again, are so surprised when I ask in detail. I'll ask, so what have you eaten for breakfast this morning? And they're like, well, I could have done better. And I will dive deeper and say, no, I really would love to hear, and really trying to take the judgment out of it, of just really trying to get them comfortable to find out where are we starting? What is this conversation about? And now they know me well enough that they know, okay, that we know part two of this. So my goal is really to help them of saying, okay, this is where you're at. Here's the goal we're going to set for this appointment. And then go from there.
Sure. And really helping them make their own choices rather than all the direction coming from you, helping them to understand how to make a more informed choice. That makes good sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one thing I'm always, when I ask, often people's first starting point will be the beverage. To have that knowledge of realizing what happens in the body if I start my day having a sugar-sweetened coffee beverage and sugar cereal, and how my blood sugar will yo-yo, so go up very quickly and then crash down pretty quickly, how that affects us in our ability to concentrate at work, in our ability to be able to make decisions in our day-to-day. It's same with children. If a child starts off with a cup of orange juice and sugary cereal, teachers can see kids who have eaten these kind of breakfast because they're not able to sit still at school and they're not able to concentrate. So to teach, okay, if one eats that compared to what I described earlier of the slow cooked oats, and there's many other options. It could be as simple as well thought out whole grain bread with a nut butter and then berries on the side or on top, or using berries as instead of a jam, where essentially now you're not adding any sugar, you're using the natural sugar of the berries. So how that changes, because the blood sugar won't rise nearly as much, we will have these more sustained levels of energy and concentration over 3 to 4 hours, which will then take us to the next meal. Mm. And that's one thing to start learning of, oh, if I don't have the 3 o'clock, you know, coffee break that's very sugar-filled and calorie-filled, I could transition that to have an apple and nuts instead. Mm. So these slow transitions that people can make.
Sure, that makes good sense. So a lot of it is just good general nutrition and kind of good advice on these kind of replacements or substitutes and what they're usually eating into something that's more healthy. I'm curious if we could talk for a little bit about specific medical conditions, maybe chronic diseases or some of the conditions that people are struggling with, like diabetes and heart disease, and you mentioned high blood pressure, even the autoimmune diseases. Are there specific diets that the specialty can recommend for these different conditions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the question about the diet. So what's the diet? And one of the things that's been found in research overall is that it's really more a pattern of eating rather than a specific diet. So when we look at the Mediterranean pattern of eating, that's really been shown. There's essentially decades of studies behind it of showing these basic principles. And I'm going to say what these nine principles are essentially of the Mediterranean pattern of eating. So essentially going for number one is vegetables, 2 to 3 cups per day. Number two is legumes, 2 to 3 servings a week. Number three is fruits and nuts, and they actually link those two, 1 to 3 servings a day. Number four is whole grains, 2 to 3 servings per day. Number five is seafood, about twice a week. That gives you omega-3s, and seafood is actually very underutilized in our country overall. Number six is oil choices. So if one makes a dressing on their own at home using something like olive oil or canola oil, the type of oil that's used has a much more positive profile as far as omega-3s, which decrease inflammation compared to a lot of store-bought dressings that have omega-6, which can be inflammatory to the body. Number seven is drinking less dairy overall. And if one does have dairy, it's better to do it in a fermented form like yogurt or cheeses. And Joe, this goes back to what your experience was in Europe that we see in European countries where there is much more use of fermented dairy products in cheese and yogurt form. Then number eight is eating red meat, but lean meat and less than 4 ounces per day and not to have processed meat. And then number nine is alcohol in moderation, meaning for women, the recommendation is one glass of wine per day, or I'm sorry, one alcoholic beverage per day. So that could be one glass of wine, 1 ounce of spirits, or a 12-ounce beer. And then for men, it's two essentially alcohol. And realizing this is unless somebody has a contraindication to alcohol altogether.
Sure.
And to finish, so to finish, what's amazing is that if we look at this Mediterranean pattern of eating, if one moves the scale, so say you don't eat any vegetables and you start eating vegetables, or say you start incorporating more seafood, it can actually reduce your all-cause mortality by 25% by moving the scale over 2 points. So you essentially get a point per how many of those nine items you hit on a regular basis.
Wow, that's huge. Reducing mortality by 25% to make some simple adjustments. Yeah. Yeah. Now, tell me again, the seafood, what was the frequency there? How often? Once a week, did you say?
Or? Twice a week, actually.
Twice
a week?
Yeah.
It's not seen daily. It's not multiple times a day. It could be twice a week is the recommendation.
Mm-hmm. So, again, eating patterns in general, similar to the Mediterranean style. I read that a lot of the chronic diseases that are common in the U.S., the diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, they tend to be kind of manifestations of the same condition. Does that kind of fit with what you're saying? They're all different expressions of the same problem?
They are, and it's so interesting because all that you brought up, and when we think of this blanket term of cardiometabolic diseases, and it's essentially that would fit anything like diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, or high cholesterol, obesity, all of these patterns are more we can correlate much easier. Oh, if I eat a lot of bacon, per se, then my cholesterol will go up or I'll gain weight. So that there's almost like a more linear straight line. Whereas when we think of something like autoimmune process, that one, some people feel that it's harder to connect the dots. And one of the things that's so amazing about not just this Mediterranean pattern of eating, but going back to that plate, again, just to reiterate, just as it's such a great visual and a great principle to just continue to remember, of filling up half that plate with vegetables and fruits, a quarter whole grains, and a quarter well-thought-out proteins, is that all of that three-quarters of the plate having really high fiber foods, so the vegetables, the fruits, the whole grains, and if you're eating plant-based proteins like beans, you will also get fiber there. And the fiber plays a huge role in our microbiome, which is the healthy bacteria in our gut or our intestines. And when we think of that, we're almost at the tip of the iceberg as far as all the information we're starting to know about the importance of having a healthy microbiome. And a lot of people have a hard time with this idea of thinking about our body filled with this bacteria. We always think of bacteria as kind of something we want to get away from, and we try to live in this very sterile environment. But it's so important not only to have a healthy microbiome, but for it to be very diverse. And there's two ways of accomplishing this. Number one is having a lot of fiber in our diet, because that bacteria feeds off of that healthy fiber. And number two, having essentially probiotics. So we can either get in tablet form, but with really most nutrients in life, it's better to get them in their natural format. So fermented foods like plain yogurt, kombucha, kimchi, sauerkraut, those have the healthy bacteria in them. So you want to eat that bacteria, and then you want to keep that bacteria healthy, almost think of it as your pets, and the fiber will do that. And how this comes around to autoimmune process is when the microbiome is not healthy. So if we think of the standard American diet, or the SAD diet, that's the acronym for it, where we get a lot of processed foods, so there's not much fiber, and again, there's not much nutrient, the microbiome really thins out, and the microbiome helps to build a really healthy mucus layer essentially between our intestinal wall and the food that's going through our intestines. So if that area gets blunted down or thinned out, now our body is absorbing nutrients and environmental parts within our food, or elements that we're not meant to absorb. And if we transition towards fluffing up essentially that intestinal microbiome wall, it actually helps decrease autoimmune processes.
Mm-hmm. And that's related to inflammation, is that right?
Yeah, so essentially if we don't have that healthy microbiome, that healthy layer, we do get more inflammation. So inflammation comes from what we absorb that maybe is not intended to be absorbed, as well as what we're feeding our body. So again, foods that have this, if we look at fats, the basics are kind of omega-6 and omega-3. So omega-3 being anti-inflammatory. So that's a lot in the seafood. So if we think of things like salmon, mackerel, kind of fatty fish, they have a wonderful omega-3. You can also get omega-3s from olive oil, avocado, olives. And that really tips you to not taking in oils compared to fried foods or otherwise that have omega-6. Even if we go to meats, so number 8 on our list of the Mediterranean pattern of eating, that even when we think of meat, the best meat to have is, if one eats meat, the best meat to have is essentially grass-finished or 100% grass-fed, because cows that have eaten grass for their whole life will essentially their muscle fibers are filled with omega-3 fats compared to corn-fed, where essentially the feedlots, the meat that we get much more readily available in our country, has an omega-6 pattern of fat accumulation in the muscle because of the corn that they've been fed.
Mm. So you mentioned grass-finished as opposed to grass-fed. What is finished? What does that mean?
That's a great question, Joe, and that's commonly confused. So all cows, when they are initially raised, are fed grass. But usually within 2 or 3 months, they're transitioned to the feedlots where they're now corn-fed. So grass-finished means that they had grass their entire lifespan.
Okay.
So that's why either grass-finished, the key terms you're looking for is either grass-finished or 100% grass-fed.
I see. Kind of their last meal, huh?
Yes. Huh. All meals in between, exactly.
So being mindful or being aware of what this microbiome status is in our body, and understanding that we need a certain amount of healthy bacteria, otherwise it gets to the intestinal walls and it starts to affect our organs and other tissue. Is that basically what the challenge is?
So you have to think of, if you think of the intestine as this tube in our body, it's a permeable tube. So it's essentially porous. So we really have to think about the layer between that tube and our bodies and how we're treating that, essentially our intestinal tract. Mm-hmm. So that's just to if I had to, again, give the buzzwords on how to get the healthiest microbiome is, again, to reiterate, number one, having high-fiber foods through vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and plant-based proteins, and then eating foods that are fermented to give you the actual healthy bacteria to re-diversify our gut lining, because if one has been eating the standard American diet, and you can actually see this if you do electron microscopy of people's intestinal walls, someone who's eaten a standard American diet, it's very blunted. There's actually very little diversity of the actual bacteria that's there. But if they transition their pattern of eating, you can start seeing that diversity coming back in the intestinal wall and this protective mucus layer that healthy bacteria can create for us.
Mm. Okay. So the high fiber diet and the foods related to fermented foods. We're about to take a break, but in just a minute or so we have before the break, can you define plant-based diet? Is that basically what you're talking about?
I love that you just asked that, because I wanted to make sure we touch base on that. So 100% plant-based diet is somebody who does not have any meat products, any dairy, any milk products, any eggs. So they 100% eat plant-based foods. And from a cardiovascular standpoint, that pattern of eating has actually been shown to not only stop progression of heart disease, but can actually even reverse it, especially if somebody is eating a low-fat plant-based diet. So being cautious even when things like avocado or olives or olive oil or nuts. So that's a difficult pattern, and there's actually a cardiac rehab center that I've done some work with that is what they help patients be able to succeed with. And also realizing that you don't have to be all or nothing. So if you move the scale, this Mediterranean point scale that I talked about, if you inch it over, you are improving. So it's not, you don't have to be 100% plant-based to get the health benefits. It really is a spectrum.
Wow, that's good information. When we come back, I'd like to touch on some of the outcome studies that you've told me about and just talk a little bit more about how it actually affects people and their longevity. But right now, it's time to take a short break. Again, please feel free to call in your questions, those in our audience, to 866-472-5792, or send an email to info@living200.club. This is Joe Casciani, and my guest is Dr. Sabrina Falchier-Montgrain. You're listening to the Living 200 Club on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at living200.club. That's living200.club.
Sometimes it just seems that nobody understands. There's one individual who can help. If you're living with somebody who faces challenges such as autism, Asperger's, or other exceptional needs, you'll want to tune into Solutions and Strategies with Dr. Sean. Living the Challenge. Together, we'll uncover a variety of solutions to the challenges faced by individuals, their families, and teachers. Listen live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite hosts. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
Okay, we're back. Thanks to everyone again for staying with us. We're talking with Dr. Sabrina Fauquier-Montgrain. We had a question come in during the break. Sabrina, do you want to address that question?
Yes. So the question is about the book Wheat Belly. As we know, there are a lot of books that really look at different aspects of eating and how kind of what food changes one can make to improve their health. And it's interesting, as far as the concern about, going back to what I was saying about grains kind of getting a bad reputation, and it's interesting in the when we talk about wheat specifically and wheat products, there's a lot of discussion about what is causing so many people to have gluten intolerance or difficulty tolerating gluten in general. And gluten is found not just in wheat products, but there's also others like farro and barley that have gluten in them as well. And so some of the theories of why people, especially in the United States, don't tolerate them, and when I say don't tolerate, for some people it can be having inflammation, so feeling kind of their joints being swollen, or also having diarrhea, or increased abdominal gas. And some people theorize that the reason that is in our country is because of the way wheat is grown, with GMOs and really trying to make these mass production, and how that has been genetically modified to be able to create these more resistant products that can affect people's tolerance, and also the way that wheat is stored in the silos and what that's brought into our bodies. And a lot of times, because of these sensitivities, people stay away from wheat products altogether. And we spoke earlier in the show of these nutritional components of whole grains, to remember that there are dozens of whole grains out there. And even for people, some people can have sensitivity to gluten, but not when they eat in the whole grain form. And if people still are, there are over 12 gluten-free grains out there that I highly encourage people to explore. And what I love now is that it used to be difficult to find whole grains, and now they're actually, even in your basic grocery store, if you spend some time in the grocery aisle, you can actually find many different grains available, and a lot of them are gluten-free. And that's actually some of the things that I show on my social media, is just to show people all the variety that's out there so people know where to start. And I tell people, go out, don't buy the forever size, just buy a small container and try it out and see how your body tolerates it and how you enjoy it.
Sure. So even if you are looking for gluten-free, you can find some of the grains that may have gluten in them, but they still won't be so harmful to somebody looking for
that. So there's that piece. So some do have gluten, like I said, barley and farro.
Yeah,
but there are others that are completely gluten-free, because gluten is something that grows in the natural in the kernel itself of certain wheat, certain grains, but other ones are completely gluten-free, and those are readily available. So even people who do have true gluten intolerance, or who have diagnosed celiac, there are so many whole grains available. So not to miss out on the health improvement that can come from whole grains just because we're concerned about wheat and the way it's grown.
I see. Okay, that's some good advice. So outcome studies? Do we have a lot of outcome studies from the culinary medicine approaches? I mean, obviously we know dietary changes and lifestyle changes can produce significant results, but anything specific done by Harvard or Tusk for these studies?
So there, it's interesting. There, if you look at any pattern of eating, so we talked about Mediterranean as a focus, and there are two studies. There's one is called the PREDIMED study that's often used where patients were followed. This was in the Mediterranean area where we looked at people having additional either nuts or olive oil in their food on a week to week, and they were actually, the study gave them this these products for free, and they showed essentially a decrease in all-cause mortality by adding these healthy oils to their eating pattern. The work that we talked about with this two-point scale, that one is quite, this was actually done out of a Greek population published in New England Journal of Medicine in 2003, and Dr. Trikopoulou, she's done a lot of work with the Mediterranean pattern of eating. So she's the one that came up with this nine-point scale and this movement of if you move 2 points in a positive direction that you have 25% reduced mortality. And then when we move to the full 100% plant-based eating, one of my favorite ones is actually looking at patients who had had a heart attack or essentially were admitted because they'd had a heart attack. And I apologize, I was actually looking at Mediterranean, one more study with Mediterranean. And before they were discharged, they were given a two-hour educational session about exactly what we're talking about today, Joe, about this pattern of eating. And just by having 2 hours of education of how moving your health through food, they had a 60% reduced secondary event. So someone who had one heart attack, they learn how to eat, they start implementing these sessions, and they had a huge reduction on having a second event.
Wow. Yeah, it's powerful. That's very powerful.
It is really powerful. Yeah. And then when you look at fully plant-based, that's where a lot of the work done at some cardiac rehab centers, including here at UCSD that I've done some work with, is looking at fully plant-based eating and especially the low fat, and looking at not just stopping any progression of clots in the arteries, but actually regression of clots that are already there, which is pretty impressive that you can actually reverse heart disease with patterns of eating.
Sure. Wow. So let me ask you about your social media handle, SensationsMD. I like that. How can we awaken our sense around food? Is that, that's what you're getting at, I understand.
It is, yeah. So the whole idea of food as being something that we need to kind of get through to get through the day. So we fill up our gas tank, we fill up our body, of kind of look at them in parallel and forgetting that food is so much more than just putting enough gas in our body to be able to keep going. So the whole idea of SensationsMD is to really wake up our senses around food. And one of the ways that we do this, and some of the work that I've been working on with Sharpree Staley, is really looking at what we call the be well, and how to have these pieces of improving your health in five simple ways. So essentially we have getting the right foods, which we've been talking about today, exercise. So the recommendation is to get the minimum 30 minutes of walking at least 5 days a week, plus 2 days of endurance training. So essentially some upper body work to get muscle strengthening, connecting with people around you, being mindful, meaning slowing down, being in the present, and then getting enough sleep. So again, wrapping those, a lot of those are related to food, meaning if we didn't sleep well last night, we are much less likely to be able to make better food choices, because often if we're sleep deprived, now we're craving comfort food, and that could mean, you know, essentially a choice that may not help our body in the long term. If we are being mindful and thinking about, where am I acquiring my food? Am I going to the farmer's market and getting to know who grew my food? And now taking that food home at the peak of freshness, I am being much more connected and thinking about, this food in front of me has a story behind it, and this food in front of me is going to help my health in a better direction. And then community. So thinking about surrounding ourselves turning off our devices, turning off TVs, computers, not eating while we're driving or while we're working at our desk, and really surrounding ourselves by people that we love and connecting, finishing our day, surrounding ourselves with people that we enjoy. And even if we're eating alone, of honoring that we are giving our body nutrients, and this is going to help our body have energy, have our vivacious self to be able to be as fully alive as it can be. So taking that time, even if it's only 10, 15 minutes to, I think of some days where I'm really busy and I'll put some hummus, which will be my protein, and I'll have some whole wheat pita, and then I'll have some raw carrots and celery, and saying, I'm putting this beautifully laid out on a plate and taking these 10, 15 minutes for me and to slow down and get my beautiful nutrients.
Wow. And those Be Well principles are Sharp Restilly origin?
They are,
or,
So we started a committee about 2 years ago of really realizing that you can look at health in this way of, in allopathic medicine, we've really, a lot of times, think of, it's almost sick care, right? You go to the doctor when you're not feeling well. You go to the doctor when you're sick, or you go to the doctor for your physical to check it off that you've done it. And to then remember, just because I've had my physical doesn't mean now I can go to the fast food on the way home because I, quote unquote, finished getting the checkup, of thinking of how can you be well on a regular basis. So that's why we really feel strongly at Sharp Restyly of taking these principles of wellness and helping people how to cultivate those five principles.
Well, those are good. And there's obviously a lot of overlap with other recommendations. We had a guest on a few weeks ago that worked on the Blue Zones. Nick Buettner was our guest, and he talked about a lot of the same characteristics of the centenarians in the five Blue Zones. So right foods, exercise, connection with people, purpose, mindfulness, good sleep habits. I think eventually we're all going to come to the same point, right, from different directions, that we're going to come to the same point. Here's what we need to do. Yeah. So we have time for just one more question. Let me ask you about this pilot you're going to be starting in January about culinary medicine. Is that locally or where?
That is locally. I'm so excited. So I talked about how in my day-to-day with patients I've been having these one-on-one conversations. And as we realize, a lot of times our medical appointments are short and we want to dive deeper, but we can't. And we are now blowing this out of the water and actually starting appointments where we're doing shared medical appointments where it'll be an average about 10 to 12 people in the room. We're going to be spending 2 hours with patients, essentially 90 to 120 minutes, deep diving into a lot of what we've talked about in this conversation, and then actually cooking with our patients. So taking these principles and then having that time when you have a knife in your hand or you have a tool, and we are creating meals together and then sitting down and eating together. So bringing a lot of these principles, having people empowered on the spot, having them go home with recipes to be able to try, and then bringing that back to discussion the next time that we meet.
Wow. And the shared medical appointment concept, I read about that many years ago, and I haven't heard about it since, but basically you have different disciplines in the same room with your patients, with a group of patients, right? You have the MD, you have the nutritionist, you have the physiologist or the rehab person. Is that what you're referring to, the shared medical?
You know, in this scenario, because of my area of specialty, it'll actually be mainly myself and a behavioralist. And behavioralist essentially would be... we are actually doing some work with other institutions in San Diego where we're having a health coach in the room. So essentially somebody who can help bridge those moments of awkwardness of, okay, I learned this, but now what do I do? So having again, these principles talked about, so it's going to be myself, a behavioralist, and then the patients with a component of having us get up during this and move around a little bit, talk about mindfulness, talk about how can we achieve this, these wonderful principles we talked about, how can we actually do this when we go home later today?
Oh, that's some good stuff. That's good stuff. Congratulations on that. I'm sorry to say.
Thank you. It's been an amazing road. It's not always easy day to day, but it feels like this is beautiful, greater good that is happening, not just for me and my joy of this and really awakening my career and my passions in ways that I never thought would happen, but then also to see the ripple effect on how many people are being are seeing changes in their life and the empowerment that they're seeing in their day to day.
Well, our time has flown by today. Thanks very much, Sabrina, for joining us and helping us to better understand the things we can do to shift our diet and habits in more desirable directions. Thanks to all of our listeners for support of our show. We'll see you next week, and our guest will be Alex Glazebrook. Alex is the Director of Operations for Older Adult Technology Services, also known as OATS. We'll be talking about how his organization brings computer technology and training to over 20,000 seniors in New York City. That'll be an exciting show. Thanks again for everyone's listening, and hope to see you next time.
Thank you for being part of the Living to 100 Club. We hope you'll join Dr. Joe Casciani again next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until next week, stay on the right track to mental and physical fitness.